Thank you, sir. We're going to get started. We have one more board member who'll be here momentarily, but we've got some bookkeeping to do in the beginning here. Welcome to the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in. Witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony. We'll do a swear-in together in a moment. All proceedings of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. Decisions of the Zoning Board are final. Challenges to the decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. Has everyone that wishes to speak today signed in and got a card, filled in a card? If you have not, please do that. Okay. All set. All right, so we'll do our invocation and then the Pledge of Allegiance. Dear God, as we gather here today, we humbly seek your guidance and wisdom. Grant us clarity of thought and understanding as we embark on this meeting. Help us to make decisions that align with your will and bring about positive outcomes. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All those wishing to give testimony today, please stand and raise your right hand and then repeat after me. I swear, your name, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Thank you all very much. We have an item to requested to be removed from the final agenda, 15 West 39th Street. Do I have a motion?
Motion to remove item number one, 15 West 39th Street.
Second?
Second.
We'll call the roll. Brad Baugh?
Yes.
Amand Turner?
Yes.
And Benjamin Griffith.
Yes.
That item will be removed from the agenda. We'll move on to approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion for the approval of the May 22nd minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Mr. Baugh?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. The minutes are approved, and we will move on to the regular agenda. We have before us 503 Eisenhower Drive, a variance to reduce front yard setback.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. This is Sadie Ashlorent with Development Services and Current Planning, here to talk about 503 Eisenhower Drive. The petitioner is requesting a variance to reduce the front yard setback from 15 feet to 6 feet and 3 inches in association with the expansion of an existing nonconforming office building in the OI zoning district. Here is the aerial and site map of the property. As you can see, it's irregularly shaped. It's located in the Highland Park neighborhood. It has the subject property measures to be about between 11,000 and 12,000 square feet. It has varying lengths of lot and width. Please note that the road in front of the structure is a private driveway right here and not a public right-of-way. The principal structure is used as a medical office, and it was built in about 1985. It has a current building footprint of about 4,436 square feet. The structure is currently nonconforming in regard to the front yard setback. 15 feet is required, and they currently have a 14-foot and 7-inch front yard setback at the closest point. Also, please note that the structure is not exactly parallel to the property line. So the petitioner is proposing an addition to the front of the structure, which would further encroach into the already existing nonconforming front yard setback. This addition would increase the building footprint by 424 square feet, and it would maintain within lot coverage. So in section 5.15.6, this is the zoning ordinance. It requires front yard setbacks of 15 feet, and so they're requesting a front yard setback of 6 feet and 3 inches. Additionally, the owner has received approval from the Business Park Association, Eisenhower Medical Park, for this addition. The proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the variance request does follow the development pattern of the area, as neighboring medical buildings do have encroaching front yard setbacks, and the structure is currently nonconforming regarding the front yard setback. And as I mentioned before, the parcel is irregularly shaped. The variance is not required to make use of the subject property, and the variance would confer special privilege. So here's the proposed site plan for the proposal. The shaded in portion is the proposed addition, and like the blank space is what already exists. You can see what they would encroach further into. And then here is the survey as well. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested variance to reduce the front yard setback from 15 feet to 6 feet and 3 inches in association with the expansion of an existing nonconforming office building in the OI zoning district.
Anyone have any questions for staff? No? Thank you. Anyone here care to speak on behalf of the petition? Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Shauna Casera with Array Design. I'm the architect working on this project, which is the Coastal Imaging Medical Office Building. The only thing that I wanted to bring to your attention is that the buildings on either side of this building that we're working on do also encroach into the setback, and the expansion that we're proposing still keeps the front of our building behind those two adjacent building facades. So I'm here to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the motion? Anyone like to make a motion?
I motion that we approve the requested variance.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Motion to approve the variance request with a second. We'll roll to the roll call. Mr. Barr?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Would you like to vote?
I'll abstain.
And an abstention. And the motion passes, and the variance is approved. We'll move on to item number four, which is 4268 Ogeechee Road, a variance to drive-through signs in a BC zoning district.
All right, so this is for 4268 Ogeechee Road. The petitioner is requesting the following four variances in association with the installation of two drive-through signs at a fast food restaurant in the BC zoning district. The first to allow the second sign to be almost 10 square feet in area where 6 square feet is permitted. Two, to allow digital changeable copy to comprise 100% of the sign area of one sign where 20% is permitted. The third one is to allow it to comprise 100% of the sign area of the second sign. And then the fourth one is to allow the second sign to contain digital changeable copy. Here is the aerial and site map of 4268 Ogeechee Road. It's located in the Chatham Parkway area neighborhood. The subject property measures about 44,229 square feet in area. It has a width between 161 and 171 feet due to the slightly irregular shape of the parcel, and it is zoned BC. So the principal structure on the lot is currently in use as a fast food restaurant, and it was built in about 2006. It has a building footprint of 2,212 square feet. The petitioner is proposing to install two digital signs in the drive-through, and so with that, they are requesting four variances. One of the signs has three panels with a total screen size of almost 30 square feet, and the second sign has one panel with a total screen size of 20 square feet. And then, also important to note, both signs have a digital screen across the whole sign. So all four of these variances are requested in regards to Section 9.9.11 in the zoning ordinance, and they go through C, D, and E. Additionally, staff did research to understand industry standards for digital menu boards and was unable to find significant literature Staff linked other signed ordinances in the southeastern region right here for Atlanta, Charleston, Charlotte, Greenville, and Jacksonville. The ordinances weren't as strict as they didn't categorize drive-through signs in the same way as Savannah. They appeared to be a little bit more flexible and lenient in regards to drive-through signs. Additionally, the proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the variances are consistent with the prevailing development pattern of drive-through signs. The requested variances are likely financially motivated. And while the variances are not required to make use of the subject property, they would not confer special privilege upon the petitioner. Here is the site plan of the fast food restaurant, and then this red area is where the proposed drive-through signs would go. Here are the two models for the drive-through signs. And then I'll scroll down to here are more of the models. And then also example images of what they would look like when they're posted. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the four variances in association with the installation of two drive-through signs at a fast food restaurant in the BC zoning district.
Thank you very much. Any questions for staff? No? Would the applicant like to come forward?
Here to answer any questions, Jeff.
Just introduce yourself and say that again, please.
My name is Cody Bethel of Calhoun Management Corporation.
Does anyone have any questions? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that would like to speak on this variance application? Seeing none, I will move to board discussion. Any board discussion? Anyone like to make a motion?
Motion to approve the petitioner's request.
Second.
Second.
A motion is to approve the requested four variances has been made by Mr. Plunk. Mr. Barr?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
The motion is passed, and we'll move on to item number five on the agenda. 119 Scarborough Street, variances to side yard setbacks, maximum building coverage, and eaves roof overhangs.
Okay. This is in regards to 119 Scarborough Street. The petitioner is requesting the following four variances in association with the construction of a primary dwelling on a vacant non-conforming lot in the RSF5 zoning district. The first two variances are in regards to the side setbacks. They're reducing from 5 feet to 3 feet. Third is to exceed the maximum building coverage of 40% by 1%, and then additionally relief from eaves or roof overhangs measuring 1 foot. Here is the subject parcel right here. The property is located in the West Savannah neighborhood. It measures about 2,340 square feet in area, which is 26 feet of width by 90 feet of depth. It's important to note that the parcel is non-conforming in the zoning district with regard to both lot area and lot width. The parcel does also have lane access. The lot is currently vacant. The petitioner is proposing to build a single-family dwelling with a building footprint of about 956 square feet. The proposal does not meet the lot coverage, side yard setbacks, and roof overhang requirements. Additionally, the petitioner has indicated that off-street parking space will be met. Section 5.7.5 addresses both the side yard setbacks, where 5 feet is required and they're requesting 3 feet, as well as the maximum lot coverage, where they're requesting to exceed it by 1%. Additionally, Section 433AI2 discusses the extension of eaves or roof overhangs, where the petitioner is requesting to extend an additional foot into the overhang. The proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the parcel is significantly smaller than expected by the zoning district, which is a hardship. The literal interpretations of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district. And while the variances are not required to make use of the subject property, they would not confer special privilege upon the petitioner. Here is the proposed plan for 119 Scarborough Street. This is the first floor and the second floor. And with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested 4 variances in association with the construction of a primary dwelling on a vacant non-conforming lot in the RSF5 zoning district with the following condition: to install gutters to divert runoff from adjoining properties.
Any questions for staff? Okay. Is the petitioner present? Anybody online?
I do hear one raised hand. Altrina Harris. Okay. Okay.
Yes, I'm present online.
There we go. We got you. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
I think the staff did an excellent job explaining my proposal and my ask. I mean, we want to be able to build a beautiful home in the community. So allowing these variants would allow us to do that. The lot is very small, and we want to really be kind of a pillar in helping to develop the west side of Savannah to bring more individuals that want to have a decent-sized home there. So I would be grateful if you guys can approve my request.
Do you have any issues with the condition that the staff has put on this approval to install gutters to divert runoff from adjoining properties?
No, that will be fine.
Okay, all right, very good. Any questions for the applicant? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would anyone like to make a motion? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on behalf or against the motion? Okay, thank you. Anyone like to make a motion?
I motion that we accept staff recommendation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
So we have a motion on the table to accept the 4 variance requests.
Along with the condition proposed
along
by
with
staff.
The condition proposed by staff. Okay. Mr. Barr?
Yes.
Mr. Blunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
The application has been approved and the variance granted.
Okay. Thank you all.
You're very welcome. Number 6, Gunny Street, a variance to front and rear setbacks.
Okay. It says for 6 Gunny Street, the petitioner is requesting the following 2 variances in association with the construction of a primary dwelling on a vacant lot in the RSF6 zoning district. 1, to reduce the front yard setback from 20 feet to 10 feet, and 2, to reduce the rear yard setback from 20 feet to 10 feet as well. Here is the aerial and site map for 6 Gunny Street. I'll mention this later, but as you can see, it is oriented differently than expected by the zoning ordinance, and it also fronts both John E.D. Court and Gunny Avenue. The subject property measures approximately 6,000 square feet in area with 100 feet of width by 60 feet of depth, and it is conforming in the RSF6 zoning district. Like I mentioned, it is a double frontage lot. The lot is currently vacant. The petitioner is proposing to build a single family dwelling with a building footprint of 1,510 square feet. And it is important to note that the plans indicate that the dwelling will front on John E.D. Court. The proposal does not meet the front and rear yard setbacks. However, the requirements for side setbacks, lot coverage, and an off-street parking space are met. So section 5.7.5 of the zoning ordinance requires the front and rear yard setbacks of 20 feet, and they are requesting 10 feet for both. Additionally, on June 30th, 2008, a major subdivision was approved close to 6 Gunny Street, but this parcel is not included, which I will show you later in this presentation. Additionally, the owner has received a letter of support from the Allenville Estate Subdivision Property Owners Association for these requested variances. The proposal is not consistent with the intent of the ordinance. However, the parcel is not oriented as anticipated by the zoning ordinance, which is a hardship. The requested variance is likely financially motivated. The literal interpretation of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the zoning district. And while the variances are not required to make use of the subject property, they would not confer special privilege upon the petitioner. So here is the plan for 6 Gunny Street. The dashed lines are where the required front and rear yard setbacks are, where this is where the front is and this is where the rear is on the Gunny Street. And then also to show you all the major subdivision that was approved. So lots here and then up through here, 1 through 17, were all part of the subdivision. But then this is where 6 Gunny Street is. It was not included in this, which is important to note. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the following two variances in association with the construction of a primary dwelling on a vacant lot in the RSF 6 zoning district. And additionally, MPC staff does recommend that the property owner seek inclusion in the established Allenville Estates subdivision POA.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? No? Okay. Would the applicant come forward, please?
Good morning. My name is William Cunningham with Coleman Company, representing JED Construction. As stated before, we're seeking a variance for the front and rear setback reduction, as well as including a 20-foot garage setback to make sure we're not impeding on any circulation on the sidewalk, left enough off-street parking. So this is one of the four out parcels, you can call it, of the Allenville Estates. They're purchased at a later date, and we're seeking this variance to essentially make for a feasible building pad. Essentially, right now, you have a 20-foot depth to be able to build a single-family home, and this would make it for 40 feet. After meeting with MPC staff, we concluded that it would be wise to also implement a non-accessible easement on the rear of the property to make sure that it's fronting John Eady Court and that you're not having kind of two-way traffic on either side. And the applicant does intend to include this in the Allenville Estates Property Owners Association. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I have a question. You mentioned the garage.
Yes, sir.
I don't see the garage on the application.
So if you look at the internal line within the property boundary on the front, it calls out the current RSF 6 front setback as well as the 20-foot proposed garage setback. So it's kind of towards the bottom of the page, and you can see it on that line. So the
variance? Oh, okay.
Yes, sir.
That was my confusion. I thought you were saying that you needed a variance for that. You don't need a
variance. No, sir. We're trying to make that to fix things up. Any other questions?
Anyone have any questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know we have a number of folks here that would like to speak. I do have cards, so it's probably going to be easier if I just call you up. Is that all right? So, Ms. Toshiba Cooper-Jackson, are you here? Would you come up, please? And just please introduce yourself. Our screens have gone blank in case people are wondering what's going on up here. So we're just fixing our screens. Hello, how are you?
My name is Toshiba Cooper-Jackson. I reside at 103 John Eady Court, and I am very much so opposed of this variance. It's right in front of my house. We do have small children around there. We were promised a clubhouse. We pay HOH fees. If you put that house there, where is the clubhouse going to go? Where are the kids going to play? There's no greenery. I mean, the street is already, both streets are narrow, Gunny and John Eady. So once you put that house in front of my house, then the other houses go there. Where will the children play? Okay. Thank you.
Hold on. Any questions? No? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Ms. Wright-Wilson. And again, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair and Board. I am Latoya Wright-Wilson. I've been born and raised up in Liberty City off of Gunny Avenue. It's a discrepancy. Edie, though I welcome my new neighbors, some are not so welcoming. I've had a lot of issues and problems since this development has happened, taking place, and I'm opposed of it for several reasons. Like the young lady said, when he proposed it to us, where's the clubhouse? Where are the kids going to play at?
I've had my property imposed on. It's several things. When I leave out of my street to come out, there's safety issues because, for one, when they're leaving out of Allen's Estate, Edie, Johnny's Street, I have to wait. We already have a high traffic area. And to see, if you put a home there, that's going to make more problems with trying to see oncoming traffic coming from both sides. I'm opposed of it. I'm not for it. I have my new grandbaby and everything else. That's children coming in the areas. As we gotten older, there were no children for a long time. And to hear little kids playing, that sounds good. And to see them playing, that sounds good. And if you put more homes out there, they already cut down all the trees. And so one of his residents cut down trees without my permission, caused my taxes to go up and all. And I got rubbish from his construction onto my property that I've asked for years to have removed, and it's still there. And I have pictures. So I am opposed of it. I'm not for it at all.
Hold on one second. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ms. Bryant? And please introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Gloria Bryant. Good morning to everyone. I live in 114 John Edie. When we purchased the house, we have been told that it was only going to be 17 homes. And that was one of my reasons why we purchased the house, kind of like a small subdivision. And, you know, I would like to see some greenery, you know, and like they say, kids need somewhere to play. And I would love to see a clubhouse. You know, we've been told that. So nothing been happening. So I don't know, but I oppose, you know, 17 home. It should be 17 home. That's it. He cannot just change it. So I oppose.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions? No? Okay. Thank you so much.
You're right.
Mr. Bryant? And again, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, board members.
Good morning.
Charlie Bryant. My wife and I started this process 5 years ago, building on John Edie Court, which is Alabama State. And the reason we wanted to move out there, because it was a small subdivision, no traffic, well, minimum traffic. We were told by the builder that when we moved out here, that this is 17 home sites. The city is zoned for, it's zoned through the city for 17 home sites. He said that the four lots that was out there was going to be green space. I'm like, that's great. And I may put a pool or a clubhouse there. I say that's even better for the community. Mr. Edie never informed us. I see it's a letter up there saying something about homeowners association approved. We never had a meeting. Homeowner Association never had a meeting to even get established. Okay. When we saw that sign up there, that's the first time we knew what was going on. Thank God the city got laws and there's laws to protect citizens. That house, if you look at the site and you look at those four lots, my lot is lot 17. Okay. Look where those lots are located. If he was permitted to build that house, he would somehow build the rest of those homes, he would fill those three other lots. Look at that lot, A, B, C, D, right here, and you will see that that lot, if he was to build a house on that particular lot, it would be on the side of my front yard. My front yard is 60 feet long. That lot is 60 feet long. The entire house would be on in my front yard. So when you come out of my driveway or my door, you will be looking directly at a house. You couldn't even see the street. That would be a safety issue. If you look at that road, it's curved. It's like a snake. And if you come from the end of John Eady and you're going towards Steele Avenue going north, you couldn't even see the cars coming around the curve until you right on the curve. That's a safety issue. Children playing in the street is a safety issue. So, and why are we trying to, builders are trying to just gouge developments and just crowd neighborhoods up? We need to stop this. It's happening all over. I get that we have a shortage in homes to be built. I get that. But neighborhoods have some protection, I would hope. And the neighbors pay taxes out there. And I will hope that y'all will consider to deny this variance because it would be unsafe to the neighborhood and it would probably bring down home value. Would you want to walk out your house and look to the right and see an entire house and you can't view the other neighborhood, the other houses? So with that said, and it would look awkward. It would just look awkward. And again, the subdivision is zoned for 17 home sites, not 21. So with that, I would recommend that you deny this request. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Now, what I did saw on your website that took an alarm to me was that it had on there MPC recommend approval.
Right.
How you recommend approval and not hear input?
That's what this meeting is, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. You're welcome. Question. A couple people have mentioned that the 17 lot subdivision, these lots appear to be part of a subdivision that has significantly more than 17 lots in it. What's the status of that? Are these independent of that subdivision? They are.
It is my understanding they just weren't included in the subdivision, so they're kind of like remnant lots.
And the second part of it, my question is that I'm trying to stay within the guidelines in which that we operate here, right? There was mention that the homeowners association had provided a letter of approval. Is that correct? No.
Let me pull it up. This is what we received from the property owners association.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, I got you. Obviously I'm very concerned about this. The applicant is the one who provided the letter saying that he approved it. I've got members of the community who say that they never saw any meeting, never been invited to an association, what have you. I'm particularly uncomfortable with this. Ed, would you give us some input here?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to offer you all a little bit of clarification.
Don't forget to introduce yourself.
Director of Development Services here. So I'm sitting here and I'm looking a bit more closely at this subdivision. So just to point out, this is a subdivision plat for a major subdivision. It was for the purpose of establishing 17 single family homes, home sites. And there are some reference letters here on these adjoining parcels. And if we refer to this table, that's why I pulled up this version. This shows that this land is actually owned by other people. Nonetheless, the point here is that the subdivision of this particular parcel of land does not necessarily have bearing on these other existing parcels. So what I wanted to confirm before I got up here and said anything was that there's nothing about this document that suggests to me that there's any sort of encumbrance on the development of these lots. And in essence, what we're talking about is the developable area of these as they were left in a configuration that is atypical with regard to what the ordinance is sort of expecting. You're expecting a front yard setback, typically in a conventional setup of about 20 feet. You'd have a rear yard that would be about 20 feet, sides that would be about 5 feet. And so because these particular parcels are oriented differently, you're being asked to consider the fact that this is atypical, right? And so there was not necessarily any encumbrance that was placed on these parcels. They were under separate ownership, and this plat does indicate that. So any type of obligation that is owed these homeowners would come from the property owners association that would have been established. It would be a private matter. The conduct of the affairs of this particular property owner association are not necessarily within the purview of this board. So I'm happy to answer any other questions you all may have.
The who currently owns that property?
Let's pull up Sages and see. See, while Sages is doing that, this is at the time of subdivision indicated as Lot D. This says now or formerly Thomas and Carrie Campbell, Staley Avenue. And so that's what it's saying at that time. Let's see if we can get Sages to do anything. Okay. I'm sorry, this is Six Gunny location address. Pull up Gunny to get us to the map. Oh, JED. So JED, I guess subsequently purchased all of these properties. At the time they were subdivided, you can see that yep. Yes, sir.
Would the petitioner like to rebuke public comment?
Yes, sir. So just for understanding, Mr. Edie, we wrote this letter. He's the declarant of the POA. We submitted it to the county. He didn't hold an official meeting, but he did go around Allenville Estates and communicate with the residents there just to get their temperature on it and see what was going on. In terms of the pool and I guess amenity sites that were proposed, he's not aware of that as far as we're concerned. And yeah, I don't have anything else at this time. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Yes, sir.
Do we have any questions?
Would it be possible to put a house on the property without?
Yes, sir. It would. It's just making a more feasible building pad. You could construct a single family dwelling right there, right
by,
now.
By right.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you. We're going to enter into board discussion.
Thank you.
I'm uncomfortable with this because it just doesn't look right. What I would like to do is I would like to push this off to the next meeting to give the owner and the residents an opportunity to meet and iron out their issues. There's obviously some stuff that has gone on here. We've got a number of folks who have stood up and said that they were made promises. There's, you know, transfer of property. There's a letter from a non-existent property owners association. It just doesn't look right. I don't feel comfortable with it. And so I'm going to make a motion that we table this for till the next meeting to give the applicant and the residents an opportunity to meet and discuss their differences.
Second.
So I have a motion to push this item off till the next meeting to allow the residents of the subdivision to meet with the applicant slash owner and iron out their differences, and we'll
formally requesting that they hold up.
Formally requesting that they have a meeting prior to them coming back to us. Mr. Baugh?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
And that motion passes, and the application has been pushed back until a formal meeting is held between the residents and the applicant.
Do we need to be date specific?
July 24th.
Yeah. So if the meeting is not held prior to July 24th, there will be no meeting to come back here. So we'll continue to push it down until that meeting is held. And then we'll revisit the thing after we know that there's been an actual meeting of the association or members of the association. All right. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is 116 West Duffy Street. A variance request to side yard setbacks for accessory structure and primary dwelling.
Okay. This is for 116 West Duffy Street. The petitioner is requesting the following variances in association with the construction of an accessory structure and addition to a primary dwelling in the TN1 zoning district. The first two variance requests are for the side yard setbacks of the accessory structure to go from 5 feet to 3 feet, and the third variance request is for the side yard setback of the primary dwelling from 3 feet to 0 feet. Here is the aerial and site map of 116 West Duffy. You can see it is a townhome with two other townhomes to the east. It's in the West Victorian District neighborhood as well as the Victorian Historic District. This application is also associated with a request for a certificate of appropriateness. It was on the agenda for yesterday's Historic Preservation Commission meeting. It is my understanding that this item was approved yesterday, and historic staff is here to answer any questions if you have any. The subject property measures about 3,192 square feet with about 30 feet of width by 105 feet of depth. It is conforming in the zoning district for the townhome development standards. Additionally, the parcel does have lane access. So the principal dwelling on the lot was built in about 1900, and it is a townhome connected to two other ones to the east. It has a building footprint of about 1,128 square feet. The petitioner is proposing two things. One, to construct an accessory structure at the rear of the property with a building footprint of 441 square feet. They are requesting to encroach into the two side yard setbacks for the accessory structure. Additionally, their second proposal is to put a roof over a deck in the rear of the primary dwelling. This roof would align with the shared wall of the primary dwelling. It would bring it to 0 feet. The primary dwelling's building footprint would increase by 120 square feet by putting a roof over the deck. Section 8.7.3.8.I requires side yard interior setbacks of 5 feet for accessory structures. The petitioner is requesting to reduce this for 3 feet for both the western and eastern sides. Additionally, Section 5.12.5 requires side yard interior setbacks of 3 feet for blocks with contributing structures. The petitioner is requesting to reduce this to 0 feet, where the deck would be covered with the roof at the rear of the property and would align with the setback of the rest of the primary dwelling. So since it's a townhome, it's already at 0 feet, so it would align with the rest of that. The proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, since the primary dwelling is a townhome, the existing side yard setback is 0 feet with the shared wall. The requested variances are likely not financially motivated. The variances are not required to make use of the property, and they would confer a special privilege. So variance relief is a remedy afforded to all similarly situated property owners. Here is the site plan for 116 West Duffy Street. In the rear, you can see the pink shaded portion is the proposed accessory structure, and the red portion is where it would be encroaching into the side yard setbacks. Additionally, the same for the deck with the proposed roof, where the red portion would be where it encroaches into the side yard setback. And then also to scroll down, just to give an elevation for the roof over the deck, and then also an elevation for the proposed accessory structure with two-car garage in the bottom. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested three variances in association with the construction of an accessory structure and addition to a primary dwelling in the TN1 zoning district, with the following condition: to install gutters on the accessory structure and the proposed roof overhang to divert runoff from adjoining properties.
Thank you very much. Any questions for staff? Ms. Caitlin, would you come talk to us?
Good morning, Caitlin Chamberlain, Director of Historic Preservation and Urban Design. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have about the project.
Thank you. Yesterday, everything was approved over for the COA?
Yes.
And are you in agreement with the MPC staff approval of this variance?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Is the applicant present? Okay.
I'm back.
Yes.
Shauna Casera. I'm the architect working on this project, and Caitlin just said everything that I was going to bring to your attention. We did get approval yesterday, and you know, it's kind of a side note, but from my perspective, I'm always in between the historic district regulations and the city regulations. So I just want to note that, yes, we are compliant with what the Victorian District is asking of us. Also, we are providing two off-street parking spaces and no ADU. This is strictly a garage with a roof deck above. Lastly, it's a townhome. So the structure already goes to that eastern lot line. We're just asking to extend the roof. Any questions?
Any questions, guys? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any member of the public wish to speak in approval or disapproval of this application? Anyone online? No? Having seen none, I'm open to a motion.
A motion to approve all three requested variances with the condition of installation of gutters.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion on the table to approve the three variance requests with the condition of gutters being installed on the accessory structure and proposed roof overhang to divert runoff from adjoining properties. Mr. Baugh?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
The motion passes and we will, the variance is approved. Okay. Number 1624 Chester Street, a variance to lot size, square footage, and rear yard setbacks for an ADU.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services. This is a request, in essence, to convert an existing accessory structure into an accessory dwelling unit on the property at 1624 Chester Street. And so there are four variances that are requested in association with this conversion. The property is in the RSF5 zoning district. You can see it here on your screen. It is a conforming parcel within this zoning district that is about 6,000 square feet, where 5,000 are required. And the original home was built in or around 1949. It contains about 949 square feet. There is an accessory structure of which there's no record in the tax assessor's database. However, aerial imagery dating back as far as 2003 does show that the structure has been there. The petitioner claims that it was acquired as part of their purchase. So this is not something that they placed there. In looking at our standards, 125% of the minimum lot area for the use in that district is required to establish an ADU. And so this is just short of that at 120%. Also, the zoning ordinance ties the size of an accessory dwelling unit to the footprint of the principal structure. This structure would exceed that by 23.2%. The zoning ordinance does require also that there are side and rear setbacks. The side setback can be the same as the principal. In the rear, if no lane is present, at least 5 feet. And so in looking at the standards, staff is going to recommend approval of this, and I came to tell you specifically related to this petition, there are some text amendments that are in process right now where we're looking at variances related to creation of accessory dwelling units. And so I thought this was a good time to kind of give a little bit of a heads up where we are strictly talking about the conversion of an existing accessory structure. We are going to propose text amendments that would allow that to happen. This is an incident where there will be no expansion of this existing accessory structure for its conversion. And so it will remain in that exact same footprint with this exact same setbacks. Also, we are going to seek to reduce the minimum required lot area from 125% to 120%. So these are things that are currently in the works, and I just wanted to give you guys a heads up on that. So with that, again, staff does recommend approval of these four variances to reduce the minimum lot size, to permit 120%, to exceed the 40% square footage maximum by 23.2%. To reduce the western side interior setback for an ADU from 5 feet to 2 feet, and also to reduce the rear yard setback for an ADU from 3 feet to 2 feet. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Do we have any questions for staff? No. Thank you so much. Is the petitioner present? And please introduce yourself, sir.
Good morning to the board. My name is Jonathan Brown. I'm the son of Noni Grant, which is the current owner at 1624 Cheshire Street and the project manager currently. Only thing that I would like to add to what he's already stated is that we do have unanimous support from all of our neighbors surrounding us. Signed here, I can present these if you want to take a look at can I approach. Maybe these. And in addition to that paperwork, in our previous meeting with the MPC, there was another recommendation in terms of being able to reduce the size of the property where a variance would not be actually needed just because one of the parking spaces that is on the front lot is currently not being used. So it's surrounded by trees, if you will. And so by omitting that as a part of the actual acreage, then that would eliminate the need for one of the variances by making the lot size bigger. So I just want to put that out there, and I'm open to any questions that you guys may have for me as well. I do have some photos here of the property where you can see that it is surrounded by trees on essentially all sides. So it's not something that would be any changes to the neighborhood in terms of visibility, if you will, because you can't see it because of how the lot is set up. So it's very difficult to see it from the right left property. So the only way that you can really view that is from the back. There's some shrubbery there and trees as well. But just to give a visual image of what we have there.
So these pictures are the actual structure itself, the current structure.
Yeah, so this currently is the front structure here. That picture that we're looking at, that's the front house.
Okay,
and so
that's
we,
what I thought. That's,
yes.
That's what I was curious.
And then, yes, so that was
and this
more
is,
so.
This is the.
Exactly,
okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So that structure, that picture was more so for the visual reference of the trees surrounding the property to give you a better idea how it's surrounded by trees.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions for the applicant? No? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any members of the public that would like to speak regarding this petition? No? All right then. Yeah. So I'm open to board discussion. Anyone have any comments, pearls of wisdom? Okay. I'm receptive to a motion.
I motion we follow staff's recommendation and grant the requested variance or variances.
Second.
I have a motion for approval of the four requested variances. Mr. Baugh?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
The motion passes and the variance is approved. We will move on to the last item on the agenda, which is number 11 West Gordon Street, an appeal to a decision made by the HDBR.
Mr. Chairman, before we go on, I want to make sure for this case in particular, we kind of remind everyone to introduce themselves and make sure we're speaking directly into the mic on stuff because this could potentially go to a court case following if history is to be our guide. So I just want to make sure we're clear with all that.
Thank you for that. That's correct. So everyone who wishes to testify, have they all been sworn in? Yeah. Okay, great. All right. Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Mr. Condon. Again, Edward Morrow here. So this is an appeal of a certificate of appropriateness that was granted by the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. I believe this was approved on April 9th of 2025, and it was approved on its second appearance. Originally, it appeared and was decided for continuance on February 12th of 2025, and on its second appearance, after revisions, it was approved in a 5-1 vote with conditions. And so essentially, the appellant, who I believe is the next door neighbor, Ms. Lyle, is appealing this decision of the HDBR to grant the certificate of appropriateness at 11 West Gordon, arguing four issues specifically. First, that the proposed structure would constitute a second accessory dwelling unit on the property where only one is permitted. The second issue, the proposed use of the structure is for impermissible commercial purposes. The third one, that the proposed structure exceeds the maximum permissible floor area. And the fourth one, that the proposed accessory structure exceeds the maximum permissible building coverage. I have listed out these standards here that are raised in opposition to the approval of this COA to identify that none of them fall within Section 7.8, which specifically relates to the historic district, the downtown historic district, and the review requirements associated with the certificate of appropriateness within this particular area. All of these are related to principal use and associated standards for principal uses and accessory structures. So I think that is significant. The appellant is requesting
because there's a lot of stuff here, and I just want to ask you questions as we go along, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
So your position is that they're using the wrong references.
Absolutely right. This is an incorrect venue to, or rather, I guess we could say that the right point of contention was not raised.
Okay.
The things that are objected to are not within the scope of a review for what is actually being appealed.
Thanks.
So if these were requests for, if there was an approval of a variance, and the ones that would have been requested, my assessment is that it would have been a combination of the HDBR, which also has the authority to approve certain variances, and also this board. But it was a combination of variances here that are alleged to have been required in order to permit this. But again, all of those are variances, and this is an appeal of a grant of a certificate of appropriateness, none of which is within any of the sections that are listed here. All of those items are identified in Section 7.8 related to the historic district overlay, the landmark historic district overlay.
Thank you for making that clear for us.
Okay. Awesome. And so the appellant is requesting that the board, this board, would essentially overturn the approval of that certificate of appropriateness. MPC staff finding that there were no defects related to the issuance of the COA recommends that this board uphold and affirm the decision of the Historic District Board of Review. And so in essence, the question is, did the Savannah Historic District Board of Review err in its approval of the COA for the proposed structure at 11 West Gordon Street? And so again, essentially the findings were that this was brought by the architect Eli Lurie on February 12th, where there was a decision to continue it. It returned to the HDBR and was ultimately decided upon favorably in a 5-1 vote on April 9th. And that is the decision that is being appealed. In reviewing this, again, the Savannah Historic District overlay is found in Section 7.8. The issues are tangential. They are very much related, but they are tangential and not specifically related to the approval that is being appealed. Most significantly, neither MPC Development Services staff nor Historic Preservation staff received indication from the zoning administrator of required variances in the course of this review. Staff did, however, receive a letter from the city attorney's office that implied the use of a calculation methodology that differed a bit from the normal course of operations and from the procedure that is described in the ordinance. Again, I don't necessarily think that's central to this, except to say that if there were issues that were identified, the city directly receives these applications, and we typically kind of conference the need for various applications. We have a petition today that was requested to be removed from the final agenda because there are issues that need to be resolved involving both boards, the Historic Preservation Commission and this board. So there's a conferencing, as you're aware, that happens as we decide, is it okay to make this decision without the input of one board or the other? Those issues were not raised by the zoning administrator. And so we were all of the opinion that this was something that the issues that were identified could be resolved through a redesign process that would not necessarily alter the exterior design, which is essentially what's within the HDBR's purview to assess. These were all things that, based on the submission, they met our understanding of the intent of the ordinance. And not only that, if things internally were to be shifted around, those were things that would not affect the outcome of the assessment for a COA. So, again, just to kind of walk through, that's what I've just described here. The zoning review conducted by the city's planning and urban department is typically the point at which these issues are identified. MPC staff was not alerted that there were any variances, and in reviewing the staff report for that was prepared by MPC Historic Preservation staff, they did not raise any issues because based on the submitted packet here, you can see all of these metrics are outlaid here. None of them raised red flags. None of them raised concerns. Specifically, we're talking about the footprint of the accessory structure and also the total lot coverage, which you can see here as well under the 75% that is permitted within that zoning district. Secondarily here, I would say in related, significant, probably not central to this issue, was some misunderstanding about the nature of the calculation process. When we look at accessory structures, specifically building coverage, I'll say we're talking about buildings when we talk about accessory structures. The methodology for calculating that coverage, it is not loosely lot coverage. We often say lot coverage, but it specifically says building coverage, and it excludes structures that do not have a roof. And so when you look in the standard, it explicitly says building coverage. So in looking at that, the standards explicitly state that you are allowed to have multiple accessory structures on a lot, generally speaking. And the mechanism for controlling how much of that parcel may be covered by buildings is governed by building coverage. It is referred to as building coverage. And so generally that is something else that was an issue within this. Again, zoning administrator not necessarily providing specific guidance, but we got a letter from the city attorney's office.
So, for example, as long as you do not exceed the maximum building coverage, you could have three or four adjacent structures, you know, sheds,
correct,
et cetera.
As long as they each individually are also within the appropriate proportion to the principal dwelling based on either the footprint for an ADU or the floor area for an accessory structure.
Okay.
So With that, again, I offer you some definitions, this particularly related to measurement. Building coverage shall be measured as the maximum percentage of the lot permitted to be covered by principal and accessory buildings. To calculate building covers, divide the total building footprint of the principal and accessory buildings by the gross lot area. Building coverage does not include impervious areas such as driveways, uncovered decks, porches, patios, decks, uncovered swimming pools, or screened pool cages. So again, explicitly excluding swimming pools, which was also a point of contention here, just to show within section 5.14.5, building coverage, not lot coverage, building coverage. So with that, MPC staff is recommending that the appeal be denied and the decision of the HDBR be upheld. Happy to answer any questions you have.
Anyone have any questions for staff? I think you've done a good job. Thank you. John, how are you today, sir? My zoning administrator.
I'm doing well, thank you.
The as far as you understand everything that's been presented, you know, Edwards is obviously top notch, right? So, but we just want to make sure that we're presenting ourselves correctly before we review. The zoning administrator, whether it was you, I know you were away on paternity leave and so on, reviewed this and they were okay with the findings of the historic review board.
Well, so I just want to introduce Tara Hicks from the city attorney's office here as well. So she also can speak on behalf of the city attorney's office for the city of Savannah. And I'll introduce myself, John Anagnos, planning and urban design at the city of Savannah. So I would say in general, I agree with the statement that the responsibility of the Historic District Board of Review is to review the architectural design of the structure. And so, yes, the structure does need to meet the zoning requirements, but that is not the venue for that test of whether it meets the general dimensional zoning requirements. That would come at the point of a building permit. And so, to the degree that the HDBR found that the design of the structure met the architectural guidelines that they are supposed to follow, then yes, they were entitled to grant a COA based on that architectural review.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anyone have any questions? Okay. At this time, the applicant, would you like to come forward?
Morning, everyone. My name is Ellis Allen. I'm here on behalf of Ms. Lyle, the appellant. I was able to review the staff report last night. And I guess to first address whether or not this appeal is appropriate, I believe the accessory structure and accessory dwelling unit standards under 8.7 are part of the criteria that is supposed to be reviewed by the planning director. So I believe we are, on that reason alone, entitled to an appeal and entitled to be heard by this board. It sounds like where this disagreement is primarily is the calculations. It seems like in the staff report, there is somewhat of a commingling or conflation of building coverage along with this 40% rule under section 8.7.3 subparagraph E. That section, while it addresses under subsection I, building coverage, the 40% rule is actually under subsection 2, which says the floor or within residential zoning districts, the floor area of an accessory structure shall not exceed 40% of the floor area of the principal building. So I believe the only thing that should be considered is the principal building, the square footage of the principal, or the, I'm sorry, the square footage of the floor area of the principal building. I'm not really sure where the 2004 square foot, basis came from in the calculations. I went to the property card and it says that the floor coverage of the principal building is 1,847 square feet. which is obviously less than what is being submitted as the 2004 square feet. And to kind of focus in on the building coverage against the 40% rule, specifically, it says the principal building. It doesn't say the building coverage. It doesn't say all of the buildings that have roofs. It says the principal building. So I think the ordinance there is pretty specific and clear that it is not encompassing the building coverage. That's a completely different analysis. And for purposes of building coverage, yes, the swimming pool is, as an accessory structure, is not considered, but it is considered an accessory structure for the 40% rule. Basing it off of that 1,847 square foot of the principal building, anything above 738.8 square feet violates that rule. And I think that's what we have here today. The existing ADU is 772 square feet. The proposed accessory building is 800 square feet. Both of those are in violation of this rule. I know we have a lot of letters in opposition today, but, you know, in addition to this, what we believe is a miscalculation, we also believe that this board should be interpreting this ordinance to be in the aggregate. So, in other words, it's not each individual structure. It's all of them together. Because if you follow it, you know, to a T and say, oh, each accessory structure can be, up to 40% of the principal building, well, then someone could just put numerous accessory structures that just fill up the entire lot subject to that building coverage. And I understand that our appeal was somewhat broad. I definitely understand that. But, you know, what we're trying to say here is, you know, look at the man behind the curtain here. We know what this is going to be. It's going to be a short-term vacation rental compound with somewhere between 14 and 18 rooms. This is where we all know this is going. And at this juncture, we're kind of playing this game of saying, oh, no, they're just doing another accessory structure. So, again, I understand that this is a very broad, or we had a very broad petition, but really the 40% rule alone allows us to come in here and appeal this decision. With that, do y'all have any questions?
I'm going to just get some information. I'm going to ask a question of somebody else. If you'd sit down for just 1 second, and then we're going to bring you back up.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Ms. Caitlin, can I ask you a question? So is the 40% rule part of what the HDBR reviews?
We review it, yes, under the accessory structures and accessory dwelling units. It is reviewed based on the floor area of the principal building, not the aggregate, because the building coverage is percentage would be for everything, but for per structure, it's 40% of, and it was based on that 2004 square feet that was presented in the application. That leaves 39.9% coverage for that accessory structure, which is just under the 40.
Do we know where these guys are getting this 1,000 square foot number from?
That was just not part of our review, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
John, when they do the calculation for accessories, accessory structures and such, that 40% number, are they adding up all the accessory structures? So I have a 100 square foot shed here and I have a 250 square foot garage there, and I want to put this third accessory structure in. Are they all accumulated when they're making the 40% calculation?
So when it comes to the footprint calculation, if accessory structures are attached, the interpretation that's been given by the city attorney's office is that that combined area is to be considered the footprint. But if the structures are not attached, then they are taken individually. And so in this instance, the two accessory structures, the one existing and the one proposed that would be joined by a common wall, would be considered a single footprint for the purpose of calculating that percentage. I will also note that the city attorney's office has pointed out that there does seem to be a discrepancy between the footprint provided in the COA application and the property record card from the Chatham County Board of Assessors. And so that would be something that would need to be clarified at the time of a building permit.
Thank you so much. Would you come back? This 1,000 square foot number that you came up with, where did that come from?
It's from the property card. Are you saying the 1,847?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I have some printouts if you'd like to see them. Thank you. If you add up those three line items there, it totals, maybe four, I'm sorry, off of memory, it's 1,847 square feet.
So he's using this, which is different. Edward, what was the, or Miss Caitlin, whoever has the answer easiest, what was the, so we've got eight, I'm just rounding now, so don't hold me to the exact numbers here. We've got 1,800 square feet on the property card. What was the number that the city used for its calculation for the 40%. Was it
city,
like
city? I'm sorry.
What was in the application?
I'm sorry. Existing lot coverage was 45.5%. Are you saying for the proposed accessory in relation to the principal?
Right. So we're 40% of the main structure is what we get to do. Is that, or are we talking about The point being made by the attorney is that we use the wrong number to calculate how big the accessory structure can be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm just trying to find out, according to the property card, it's 1,800 and some odd square feet, the footprint. And I thought that the number that was being used for purposes of the application was a different number.
Yeah, it's the responsibility of the applicants to provide this information.
Of course.
And the information we were provided with was 2,004 square feet of the principal building. I'm just looking to see if it's still on the site plan.
So the obviously enough, you can only deal with the information that's provided with to you. So if they give you bad information, you know, bad in, bad out, what would be the difference if we use this other number? Sorry to be a pest and ask you to do the math here. Does it make a difference?
63 square feet would make the difference. So
it
would be
still fall within the proposed,
it would be above 40%.
It would be above 40% by a lot or?
By
63 square feet. So that they would need a variance then.
They would need to request it, yep.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so very much.
I had a question. I guess, so this would normally come out, I guess John mentioned during the issuing of the building permit, if someone were to, that would be normally how this process works, that would be caught at that stage.
Did someone strike over there?
Yeah.
You would get an application. It might often be that they would go straight to the building permit process and say, hey, we want to do this, and it gets flagged by city staff. Right. Or an architect would say, hey, I know I have a discrepancy. I need 60 some odd square feet. And that's that conferencing aspect. Am I able to, through redesign, not have to ask for 4 variances or 3 variances? And so this is one that, again, generally I would usually expect an architect's drawings to be a bit more accurate, just because you've enlisted professionals to go out and they'll, do an as-built, and they will give you very precise numbers. And so that just feels like something that we would have said, hey, it's 63 square feet. We've often had this discussion on the floor. Are we able to eliminate that stair, put it somewhere else, reconfigure? So
find a place to lose the 63 square feet.
Exactly.
And that'd be the correct avenue to adjudicate that when there's a discrepancy like that.
That it's at your discretion.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
I'll be brief.
Yeah.
I believe, we can revisit this issue again at the building permit stage. That is, this standard is within this review criteria. Whether or not it violates the structural standards is part of the analysis. And, as far as, and I completely understand what the staff is saying, that, it makes sense. They should be able to rely on the information they're provided. I just want to point out that the main house, according to this application, is 2,004 square feet. That means that 800 square foot accessory building is 39.9%. Okay. So I think on behalf of my client and everyone that's opposed, why let this get any closer to actually being built? Let's look at this right now at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm so sorry. Just something I want to add. In terms of your assessment of the quality, we're talking about drawings that are going to be stamped by a professional, a credentialed professional, AIA, PE, something to that effect, as opposed to a metric that comes from an assessor from.
Right.
Okay. I just want to enter that into the record that this is the difference. So,
yeah. Thank you. All right. So we have a number of folks who would like to speak.
Are we going to have a statement from the city attorney's office?
I don't think we need one point.
No.
Yeah. So I've got a number of folks who would like to speak, and I'm going to let Mr. Jones go first.
Good morning. Did you want to hear from the city attorney's office?
Oh, I don't think I need that at the moment. If I have a question, though, I don't want to pull you up for no reason. Thank you. But thank you so much for attending the meeting.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Jones, and I'm here as a concerned citizen. And I support this appeal. I'll mention that I did submit a letter with some of the legal principles and the case law supporting them. That also includes the property card from the Board of Assessors, as well as the MPC staff report. So all of those matters are part of the record for this hearing. I attended the HDBR hearing myself. And the HDBR spent considerable energy deliberating about the Section 8.7 accessory structure rules as a condition of granting the COA. The MPC now takes the position that the HDBR was not allowed to consider Section 8.7. However, the MPC took the opposite position in the HDBR hearing. In fact, pages 5 through 6 of the MPC staff report for the hearing specifically cited the 8.7 rules as applicable standards for the HDBR to review and stated that the standards were met, and therefore the HDBR has to decide whether or not they agree with the MPC. The HDBR deliberated these issues because they thought that they were supposed to, according to the MPC staff report. Now, that was not a staff report written by Mr. Morrow. If this body agrees with Mr. Morrow that the HDBR was mistaken in considering Section 8.7 rules, then the correct action is not to affirm the HDBR decision, but rather to reverse it. Since, according to Mr. Morrow, the HDBR deliberated the wrong issues, Ms. Lyle did not get a fair hearing, which violates her constitutional right of due process. Regarding the proper interpretation of the 40% rule, the MPC, the HDBR did not follow Georgia law. Under Georgia laws of statutory construction, and I included the cases that established the principles, one must first look to the intent of the drafters of the rule. And in the HDBR hearing, there was only one person who testified as to intent. And that person was the representative of the Downtown Neighborhood Association, DNA, which played a role in the initial rules. No one else testified as to the drafter's intent, and no one argued against the DNA's testimony. Since the record has no other evidence of intent, one must follow the intent as described by the DNA, which original intent was that the 40% rule be applied to all the accessory structures in aggregate, and that includes the pool for the 40% number, not for building coverage, but the pool is a structure included in the 40% test. The second rule of statutory interpretation, and again, I gave you the case sites, is that a statute must not be interpreted in a manner that results in an absurd outcome. If each accessory structure is treated separately, then three or more structures could be as much as 120% of the floor area of the principal building, vastly overwhelming it, and four, five, six, no end in sight. There's no logical reason that a provision that's intended to limit accessory structures would have such a gaping loophole. And any interpretation of an ordinance that renders that ordinance meaningless is erroneous as a matter of Georgia law. In summary, Ms. Lyle was denied a fair hearing, and the HDBR's decision was erroneous as a matter of law. And for these reasons, I urge you to reverse the HDBR's decision. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Jones? No? Thank you, sir. Mr. Nash?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
My name is Tom Nash, and I
please speak towards the mic. Mr. Nash, please speak towards the microphone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Was recently given the opportunity to review this file when I was hired, and I don't want to speak so much to the substantive nature of this. Mr. Lurie is a lot better qualified to do that, but I want to speak to the procedural part of this. The appeal to your board, which has the power to reverse, to affirm, is a very important step in this process, but it is one which cannot ignore the fact that at every review, and we've heard of them today again, this DART Board of Review, the staff, the zoning folks, everybody has approved this plan as being appropriate or what this review consists of, which is certificate of appropriateness. It's not a building permit. It's not an STVR fight. I've been in both of those. I've been in a building permit fight with the city for 3 years. And I've seen in court an ST, short-term vacation rental owner sentenced to 10 days in jail for violating those regulations. That's for other folks to deal with. Your role is to hear the evidence, to hear the experts, to hear from Mr. Marr, to hear from zoning, and to make a decision about how this ordinance is written, not to rewrite the ordinance, not to take the bait on some, oh, we're going to have a hotel on West Gordon Street. The city is quite capable of dealing with those issues at the appropriate point. The burden of proof is on the appellant. The burden of proof is on Ms. Lyle. And they don't have that. They have not met the burden of proof. All the business about how you interpret an ordinance and how you interpret a statute. You interpret it by what it says on paper. And what it says on paper, according to the folks that know, who've consulted with the city attorney's office, is that this plan meets the certificate of appropriateness standard and should be approved. So as you listen to the rest of the evidence, I hope you keep in mind the fact that the burden of proof, which is more likely than not, oh, we think it might be something else, is not the issue here. STVR is not the issue here. Building permit is not the issue here. The issue is certificate of appropriateness, and it's appropriate. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Mopper.
Okay, I suggest that the architect speak first.
Perfect. Do you still want to reserve your time?
I do.
Okay.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Mr. Architect. Introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Eli Lurie. I really want to thank staff on this. This has been a long, arduous process, and we've gone through several reviews thus far, and they've done a really comprehensive overview of this entire project so far. This project hasn't been, it's not like we slipped it through and it just went through without anyone approving this. This went through several review processes where similar elements from the public were brought up at every meeting. It's not like this is new news that hasn't been thought about, that hasn't been reviewed. This is things that have been reviewed, have been thought about, have been brought up before, and we haven't been in any issue with any of those things previously. Our first issue that was brought up is an ADU versus an accessory structure. An ADU is a dwelling unit. It's fully encompassing of itself. It doesn't rely on any other units. So it has a fully functioning kitchen, bathroom, bedroom spaces, etc. Accessory structures cannot have kitchens because they cannot be dwelling units. We never, from the beginning of this project, ever had a kitchen in this project. There was some narrative about removing a bathroom. I don't know what that was about. We never added or subtracted bathrooms with this project. Second issue that they brought up was STVRs. The neighbor who's filed this petition has an STVR in the property next door. We have two STVRs on this property currently, but this is going to be my client's primary residence. This is a home that they've been working on and restoring lovingly and slowly over the past few years. And it's been, they use the passive income to pay for the renovations. And so this is going to be their primary home, and they're doing this for themselves, to beautify Monterey Square, beautify the neighborhood, add additional off-street parking. The third issue, that they brought up was, secondary structures and primary structures. The entire verbiage of everything about secondary structures and the 40%, all of that is to be primary and secondary. You do not want a secondary structure that looks like a primary structure. The primary structure should stand on its own, be bigger. The primary structure here is 4 stories. The secondary structure is 2 stories. Primary structure is 2,004 square feet in footprint. Secondary structure is 800 square feet in footprint. We're meeting all of these regulations that are set before us. That whole section of the zoning is meant to make one building prominent and one building secondary. Lot coverage is a whole different issue, and we are well under the lot coverage. What I would like to bring up is, let me see here if I can pull up Sages. The assessors that they pulled up with the 1843 square feet is incorrect. We have a survey showing the footprint of this house. I have my own personal drawing showing this house. Everything, they all match up except for the assessor's page because, oh shoot. Is there a way to?
I'll pull up QPublic. Okay. If that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, there it is. So if you look at the footprint here, let me see if I can split this. Oh, well, actually, so they're upside down from each other, but you can see that right here. This porch is the main body here, and then there's this offshoot of it that this drawing from the city does not have on it. So right here, there's additional floor space. There's also an out portion of this building right here that the city's drawing does also not have. They were talking about this would be a change in 63 square feet for this project, which isn't significant. So If that was the footprint, we would have changed the footprint accordingly in our drawings. But as you can see, the building as it stands now has a different footprint than what is shown on the assessor's website. And we have surveys to show that. We also, yes, we use the survey. Yes, correct. Where's the drawings? And with us, with being at 800 square feet, which is, which was the, basically the maximum that we could be at, the reason we got to that is because we aligned it with the rear of the existing carriage house. It was a design-based decision to align the two carriage houses with each other, so that it would create a uniform backyard space. It was not a maximization, derived decision. We're at below 60% lot coverage with this project. We're not trying to maximize as much square feet as we can get. We could get a lot more square feet if we did a different design because we're well below the 75% ordinance. Do any of y'all have any questions for me? Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? No. Thank you. Mr. Patel.
Thank you. My name is Hemal Patel. I'm not a hotelier. My father was. I'm not. I'm going to be living in that home. I'm a physician at the hospital for 20 years here at the trauma hospital. I got a surveyor. I got an architect. I got an attorney. I got the approval. I got a contractor. I'm not sure what the issue is, but it becomes over and over again. I guess we'll just have to go through the process as we move forward. So that's where we're at right now. Eli's very, very accurate. You know, this is going to be our home. You can see here from the picture, the way it's currently pieced together. There's just a lot of doors, a lot of different steps and a lot of different hazards. I have two small children, a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. We're going to be moving in here and they're going to hang out in the pool and we're going to be upstairs. So, and there's no access to that pool from any of the current STVRs that are there. There won't be any access actually at all. The two bottom STVRs can only go out the fronts and the sides. So this is really just a private space we're creating. Okay, thank you.
Questions? Okay. Mills Fleming.
Morning. Mills Fleming. I live at 7 West Gordon Street. Also, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not here as a lawyer. I'm here as a resident representing also the individuals. We call ourselves the Monterey Ward Associates. So it's everybody on the square who have all opposed this. In particular, the person on the other side who's Rosemary Swift and Ms. Kuhn as well.
I'm sorry. I just want to clear something up. You're opposing the appeal
No, we support the appeal.
Okay.
We oppose the Patels.
Because we're only addressing the appeal.
Exactly. So we support Ms. Lyle.
Okay.
So just a couple of clarifying points. I think the reason this has gotten a lot of activity is because this property has just been a problem property for years. It's been cited by the city for certain code violations. Many complaints have been lodged with the city, so that's why this is getting a lot of attention. We do agree that the 40% rule should be viewed cumulatively, not on a single structure by single structure basis. I think that's consistent with plain language of the ordinance. We also believe that this is an ADU as well. Originally, the original proposal did have a kitchen and a bathroom and a bedroom. And I think once they realized, oh my God, that trips us into ADU, they took that out. So that's why there's this issue of, is this really an STVR or not? So that is all I have to say, but we support Ms. Lyle.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Lyle, would you like to speak?
I would. First of all, I'm not here to have conflict with Mr. Patel. Mr. Patel's never called me, invited me in his house to talk about his project. He has my neighbors, but he never has me. I'm here because they own Stay Savannah. They own multiple houses, and they own an STVR business. None of us want to live next to a mini hotel. With this structure, they could get up to 14 rooms plus possibly in here. Any of you want to live next to that with a swimming pool? None of us do. We're fighting Walt Friedman over here on the same issue, a swimming pool with STVR. When Bill Glass was here the last time, at the HDBR, he said, hey, we have a simple solution. If Mr. Patel wants to have his family and do a pool and build his house and do this, why don't we have a deed restriction to secure Ms. Lyle that we're not going to have a mini hotel over here next to her? Well, no one's responded to that. This is turning into a commercial structure, you guys. And if you don't believe it, come over and look at it. It is absolutely a commercial structure. Richard Kessler is against it. I met with Mr. Kessler in the alley, walked the property. We looked at it and talked, and Richard said, absolutely, this is a nightmare. They cannot allow this. Richard Kessler wanted to do a boutique hotel. Do we not remember that conversation? That didn't happen. So if you don't want to turn this into a mini hotel and you want to be there without an STVR, then come talk to your neighbor and have a conversation and say, we're not going to do all this stuff. We're going to do right by the historic review board. We're going to do right by the city. We're going to do right by the downtown neighborhood association. Let's do the right thing. I do have a vacation rental. Actually, I have two certificates, but I actually only have one real rental. The other one I don't really rent out. I don't. I live there. This is an unoccupied STVR. Now, I live there alone. I don't call in and make complaints when she has people over there partying. I don't bother these people. I don't have a problem. But no one has picked up the phone to call me and say, hey, let's sit down and have a talk. So if you're not going to build a hotel there, that's great. But if you're going to put a bathroom in your garage and you're going to sit and tell me that we're just going to have a bathroom in the garage because what are you really going to do here in this? If you're going to have 14 rooms over here in STVR, then the problem's going to be bigger and bigger between us. This is a commercial property they're building. Otherwise, not a deed restriction.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Last shot, Mr. Marper.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My name's Richard Marper, and some of y'all probably know who I am. I've been involved in the historic district and preservation on the Georgia Trust, the historic board of review several times in various other things, and have fought more preservation fights than probably anybody still left alive. So, you know, this is not something new to me. I want to point out, number one, most of what I heard today is hearsay. There's no evidence, no proof of any of it. Mr. Fleming came up and said that there have been multiple complaints. I think he should have presented those complaints. Ms. Lyle standing up today and saying it's going to be a hotel. It's going to be the residence for the Patel family, period. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The architect will tell you that he never was putting a kitchen in that rear building. It's designed to be used as a playroom for the Patel's children. They have met every requirement that they need to meet. There is no question that they should be allowed to do this. I think when you think in terms of what's going on right now, it's a neighbor who's unhappy in a neighborhood who believes things that aren't true. Now, I'm sorry that Ms. Lyle was not spoken to. She has done a phenomenal job of presenting a fight, no doubt about it. She should be commended. She's probably gotten more response than some of the major preservation fights in the historic district, which is pretty shocking to me, but she has. I think that more than anything today, what I'd like to do is to say, I'm not here just to support the Patels and what they're doing. I'm here to support the Historic Board of Review, the staff, and the MPC. You know, it seems to me that the staff has spent hours and hours confirming that this project is allowable by ordinance. Why do we pay staff? Why do we have experts? If we're just going to say attorneys can come in and say that the staff's wrong because they're attorneys, I don't think so. I think that we need to give more recognition and more weight to staff than we do. I also am really curious, and at some point, not necessarily today, I'd love to find out, in all the years that I've been involved in preservation, I have never seen the city attorney's office send a letter to the Historic Board of Review suggesting that they do a continuance so that it could be re-reviewed. Why would they do that? The petition doesn't generally go to them. So somebody reached out to them that has influence. I'm not saying that it's inappropriate, but it's not normal. You know, we're seeing things going on with this particular petition that just aren't the norm. At any rate, today, there's no question in my mind that the Patels have met every criteria. Their architect is going through all the proper processes, and there's no doubt in my mind that Ms. Lyle's petition should certainly not be granted. And last but not least, I think it's interesting that Mr. Jones made a comment, and I'd like to correct this. The Historic Board of Review was not Ms. Lyle's hearing. It is a public hearing for all of the city of Savannah, not just Ms. Lyle. And he made it clear that she didn't get a fair shake. Wasn't hers to get a fair shake. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Romper. Any questions?
Can I respond briefly?
Oh, no, you can. Yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted to, address a few comments. Mr. Nash mentioned the burden of proof. Today we have come forward with proof through the property card showing that there's 1,847 square feet of principal floor space. They're saying they have a survey. Okay, let's see it. Where's the survey? Additionally, even if that survey does say 2,004 square feet, it sounds like maybe it didn't have a permit, so now we're giving credit for unpermitted build-outs at some point over the last few years that somehow made this from a 1,847 square foot building to a 2,004 square foot building. So once again, I think we've met that burden, and we would love to see a survey that showed this 2,004 square feet. And as for the map, and I'm sure you would know more than I do on this, but I believe the drawings on the property card are somewhat of an estimate. The calculations are accurate, but as far as the, depictions, they can only use rectangles and, so maybe the dimensions aren't exact, but for tax purposes, they're calculating the total square footage. And that's all I have. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Any questions? No? Is there anyone else that would like to speak that we have not called up? Anyone online?
No, sir.
Our city attorney would like to speak.
I want to make sure that we're clear on... Sure. Good morning again. My name is Tara Hicks. I'm here from the city attorney's office. Mr. Morrow initially stated when this came before you that this wasn't an appropriate venue based on what was cited. Section 5 of the city's ordinance is base zoning districts for the downtown districts, and it directs to 7.8.10M. As in Mike, directs to 8.7, and 8.73 echo is related to building coverage and 40%. So the 40% is very critical at this stage because a COA could not be issued without the design being within that spectrum. So if, for instance, this doesn't, you do end up relying on a public record, such as the property record card, the difference in what was submitted in the 2004 square foot versus the 1,847 that's calculated is actually 157. That's the difference, not just 63. And that would put it at a 43%. So the important part is if it's 43% instead of 40, it would still have to go back for another COA after it had to be redesigned. John is also correct that it could, when going to zoning, be denied at that point. But this is for the COA. This is what we're here for, and this is what's relevant. So relating just to the COA, if it's above 40%, they wouldn't be able to issue a COA based on the design if the design is too large, if that's helpful at all.
It's very helpful. Thank you so much. Could we have the architect come forward again? You submit the survey to with your application?
No, but we
have a copy of the survey.
I can find it. But that surveys like that don't have square footages on them. They just have line drawings of footprints. So it's you'd have to import it into CAD and then find the lot coverage that way.
Right. So, but you did the calculation as a licensed architect and determined that the square footage was 2004, is that right?
So I'm not a licensed architect.
Oh, excuse me.
But as a designer, I made those calculations. But my design is based off of the stamp survey.
It is based off of
from a licensed surveyor.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Morrow, could I ask you a question? So the survey shows 2004 square feet for the footprint.
This is my assumption. In the course of dealing with these drawings usually come in on the basis of an AIA stamped plan or a registered, licensed professional land surveyor's drawings in essence.
Right. And that's perfect. So they submitted that with the application.
They did not. I am happy to go now to the courthouse records if you'd like. I'll go to my office and pull it up and try and produce that. I was asking the architect if it was actually, if it was submitted by our office so that it's published online. But it's the normal course of practice that these drawings, particularly those related to COAs, they come in and they have to be fairly precise because we're talking about design related elements that are very specific. So
it seems to me that this whole argument as to whether or not there needs to be another COA is entirely based on this number, whether the city is wrong, which I've seen many times, or the surveyor is wrong, which I've never seen. So if it's possible to pull it up, I don't mind adjourning for 15 minutes or something to get it.
Yes.
You got it?
Yeah.
Please show it to us, Mr. Morrow.
Is it okay if Sally brings it around?
Please.
Okay. Absolutely. Let's let Sally bring it around.
Yeah.
Mr. Morrow, or should we pull it up?
You can see clearly on the survey, it is not the same footprint shape at all as what is on the assessor's website.
I'm going to have a 10-minute recess so we can get copies of these to get it submitted into the record, okay? You'll get a copy of it. Okay, we're going to come back into our meeting. Anyone that's listening online or anyone that is following through a device, if you refresh your agenda, you will see that the survey that we're discussing has now been added to the agenda, so you can pull it up online. Those of you who are present, we printed copies for people who wanted them to see, so we can review this. Okay.
So I guess what we're looking at actually is the survey that was produced by Craig Brewer's firm. The surveyor would produce a number of digital products that would be exported. Obviously, the plat is what is there for recording, but when the person who does the field work, they go out, they collect the points, they bring it back into the office, drawings are produced, and obviously the digital files would be conveyed. It should not be problematic to produce those files if necessary. But again, as I stated earlier, it's this seal right here. So when this person goes out and they collect these measurements, it will state what type of instrument, what level of accuracy, things of that nature. This is your guarantee that these numbers and the positions of those corners is identified. Any other features on the lot, this is your guarantee of their accuracy. So
the gentleman who, I apologize, I forget your name. Eli, thank you, Eli. Could you come back up, Eli? So based on this survey, the number that you supplied to the,
yes,
to the board was how many square feet?
2004.
2004. Okay. And that was a calculation that can be
based off of this file.
They go in the CAD.
Yes.
Run your string around it, press the button, boom, it tells you what the square footage is.
Correct.
Correct. And so that you certify that this is 2004 square feet as we see it.
I do.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner like to speak? Yeah.
Thank you. So for purposes of appeal, I wanted to know that this survey was not of record until just now.
We understand.
Yeah,
what we're trying to do is to bring everything out in the open here so that we can all understand ourselves.
Yes.
You know, what we got going on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I'd also like to add that Mr. Brewer is not here. A licensed architect is not here. Mr. Eli is coming in here and saying, oh, yes, this is 2004 square feet.
Right.
And we're all just going to take his word for it, sounds like. I think. We talk about the burden of proof. We have brought forward county approved, tax property card showing that there is 1,847 square feet. Other than that, everything so far has been hearsay. With that, I will, well, do y'all have any questions?
Questions? No.
Okay.
Thank you very much. One last time.
So I've been working in downtown historic district for roughly 10 years now, and I've never once submitted a survey with HDBR documents. Never once. Those go with when you're going for building permit. So they are not usually part of public record in this type of proceeding.
We understand.
So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Like we were trying to.
No, no. Nope. No one thinks anybody did anything bad. The does anyone else have anything else to say before we enter the board discussion? Nobody's online? Okay. All right. I think that the question before us is, did the review board err in the what their process and so on, right? So did they make a mistake? This is and I think that while certainly there is expectations on the part of folks who aren't involved in this on a daily basis that surveys should be attached to applications and so on, the process that we have, there's certain expectation that people are going to tell you the truth. Architects don't lie, because if they do, they can lose their license. Surveyors don't lie, because if they do, they can lose their license and their livelihoods. So that when I see a survey, I see something that this probably, there's a lot of stuff on here. This probably took them 2 days to do. These are calculations that are done through a CAD machine so that it's very simple and straightforward for them to look at this thing and say, this is 2,004 square feet. The city uses similar types of technology, but the city doesn't always stay on top of these things. And I personally have seen situations, I'm sure others on the board have, where there's minor discrepancies between what the property card shows in terms of dimensions and reality. Okay. So the question before us is, did they make a mistake? I can't see a mistake. The survey shows 2,004 square feet. That's our calculation.
But it doesn't. The survey does not show that.
I apologize. We're in board discussion. We do have to take the word of folks to a degree, no? And so, I'd like to hear some input from you all. Because really it all comes down to this. Does the survey show 2,004 square feet, or does it show 1,840 square feet? And everybody is, minus the applicant, everybody is saying that it's 2,400.
It's just from a burden of proof standpoint, I've not seen anything personally that convinces me that there was a serious mistake made by the board that we're being reviewed here today, and that's where I am. I mean, it seems like there's maybe some differences of opinion and, you know, different interpretations, but there's no sign to me of a mistake that was made that needs to be overruled, you know, a miscarriage of justice of any kind, which is what we're here to consider.
Not the facts of the case, or
whether there should be this or this and this, or just, you know, was there a serious mistake made by the review board? And I've not been convinced of that.
Mr. Ball?
Yeah, I would just echo everything you said, Mr. Condon, that we have to rely on experts for this information. It appears they've provided information that is accurate, and, you know, barring some future prove otherwise, I don't know what we can do here. But.
I agree. I'm sympathetic with Ms. Lyle not wanting to live next to a hotel. Yeah. That's not what we're here to decide.
And that's the reality of the thing. I'm hopeful that Dr. Patel is, you know, he's a very reputable fellow. His reputation precedes him. I know he's also a tremendously successful businessman. And hopefully he's going to be a wonderful neighbor. If I were Dr. Patel, before we leave the building, I would be coming and introducing myself, sharing phone numbers. you know. So I'm open to a motion.
I motion that we deny the petitioner's request.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
The application for appeal is denied. The motion approved. And I think that is it for today. Thank you all.